Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
And a happy July 4th to you as well, ladies and gentlemen. We are live and living color. This is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, episode 275. I am Chris Featherstone. Follow us at Crave Wrestling, of course, and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. So a friend of mine is on the show tonight, former WWE referee, current Lucha Underground referee, one of the best referees that's ever laced up a pair of referee boots, and one of the ultimate zebra man of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do a Q&A session. He's been on the show a couple times. He's been a great contribution each time. I guess you can say he's going to be a semi-regular. He's got so much to share. He's been refereeing for over 20 years, and he's got a lot of stuff to share. So today, we're going to have an Independence Day style Q&A session with my boy, none other than the one, the only, Marty Elias. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you? That introduction was phenomenal. I'm humbled. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's true, man. And I appreciate you being on the show on July 4th live. And we're going to have some fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm looking forward. You know, one of the things, that I will add to that introduction, which was awesome, Glow referee as well. How about that?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a smash hit on Netflix. Netflix and debuted, what was it, June 23rd, I believe it was.
And, yes, it did.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, Alex, formerly known as Alex Riley, Kevin Kiley. Steel Horse, Karma, or whatever you want to call her, Awesome Kong. She's a part of it as well. There's some really, really big names. So before we get into the Q&A, just let everybody know about Glow and just the awesome success that it's having. And for those who don't know the old school Glow, and just kind of like this being sort of a remake and having kind of like that old school feel with the promotional material as well. Let the listeners know, go back some time and inform some people who may not know what Glow is. Let them know what's so gorgeous about the gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
Well, first off, the ladies were gorgeous for the 80s at the time and such. And GLOW, of course, the acronym is Gorgeous Ladies Wrestling. And it was something that David McLean had put together. And David McLean, for those of you wrestling fanatics, David McLean is actually running the WOW promotion right now, Woman of Wrestling, with Jeannie Buss. But it was a creation of his and a friend of his, and they wanted to do something different. And oddly enough, you know, they got Mondo Guerrero to train the women back in the 80s. And oddly enough, you come, what, 30-something years later, and Chavo Guerrero Jr. trains the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling for this new Netflix project. And what it was in the 80s, it was pretty much a cult following. It had some music to it, some rap styles. You know, it was 80s. It had big air, all the colors and everything else. And what it was, it was a release for ladies to show empowerment, because of the fact, you know, that everything in the 80s was all about power and colorful and all this other good stuff. So it pretty much gave women an opportunity to actually grasp something and be empowered. And I feel that GLOW today on Netflix is doing the same thing. And it was great because the series on Netflix, you know, starring Alison Brie, Marc Maron, and Betty Gilpin, and a bunch of others, is very, very well written. It's written by Genji Kongen, who's the executive producer of Orange is the New Black, Carly Mensch, and Liz Flavin. And it's so cool because for everybody who's seen the series, it's 10 episodes, and every character has a little bit of a backstory and a little bit of a story where everybody has a very big part into what GLOW is in the first 10 episodes. So it's so cool to see the empowerment and see the girl power and see, you know, that women are being recognized for what they are. I mean, true heroes in a sense. And, you know, to see it come back and to see it so welcomed with open arms, because I've been told by a lot of folks, wrestling folks, that in female or male, that they love the fact that it's being brought back, because although it wasn't mainstream, it had such a cult following. So many people loved it and adored it that when it disappeared so abruptly, you know, that everybody was just kind of, oh my God, what happened to it? So now the people who were aware with it can see it again. And what's great is it's given a nod to the GLOW ladies of yesterday. So folks can go back and check it out. Matter of fact, Netflix has a very cool documentary about GLOW on Netflix now that's streaming, that gives you a whole different story as far as what GLOW was about, the girls and how they were there. It really gives you a good detailed view of it. And then you can go back and watch the new GLOW and go like, oh man, you know, this is cool. So everything kind of intertwines and it all makes sense. So, but to tell you the truth, I'm honored. And I'm honored, you know, to be a part of this and to see the success and to see how it's blowing up. It's just mind boggling to me, you know, because when I was there on set the whole time and training with the girls with Chavo and such, I mean, it was just amazing, you know, to see everything come together and to see it, what it is today. I mean, it's so mind boggling, you know, that I even tell my wife, you know, God, pinch me, you know, cause I've been a part of some cool stuff wrestling wise, but you know, to be a part of this whole TV show and Hollywood type thing, I mean, it's so cool. Everybody's already asking for season 2, and fingers crossed, you know, that it happens and we get to do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a fantastic synopsis. And for those aware of people from the WWE, one of the biggest names who came out of the GLOW series in the mid to late 80s was, of course, Ivory, Lisa Moretti.
Yes.
And and of course, we know, you know, for those who follow WWE, they know her as Ivory. And Lisa was there in the mid 80s, and just she, that combined with a bunch of other wrestling projects, gave her an opportunity to become a part of the WWE family. So and she won the Women's Championship. So it has an amazing pedigree, and you know, who knows? Maybe this time there might be some more prodigies that's come out of GLOW. So looking forward to just for the rest of the series, and it's so far so good, and looking forward to it. So you ready for some Q&A?
Sure. Let's all rock
right.
it.
Let's get some Q&A here.
Dramatic. That's awesome.
Yes, absolutely. Let's start out with the first question. So we're going to talk about some Raw and SmackDown with you and me and my awesome co-host, Evan, who will be coming online here soon. And we're going to talk about, you know, John Cena coming back after, you know, a few months absence. He's been gone since WrestleMania 33 in Orlando, doing some extra work outside of the WWE. Of course, we, you know, we're very aware that this is the tail end of John Cena's career, and which it should be. He just turned 40 years old this year, but you know, he's been in the WWE for 15 years now, and you've had some interactions with John Cena in the 3 years you were there, and were a part of some moments with Cena. What were your early thoughts of John Cena when refereeing his matches?
Well, you know, let's take it a little back further. I mean, further back. I was actually in UPW. I was the booker for UPW John actually came in to wrestling with the Bell brothers, you know, Chris Bell, who did Bigger, Stronger, Faster, and Mark Bell, powerlifter and such. And, you know, I was there with Cena back when he first started coming in and the UPW and was
Joe
really
was
getting
too,
looked
right?
at. Joe was there as well. Yeah. So I got to book both those guys there. But John, even back then, you know, when he was still greener than green, you knew he had the it factor. I mean, he just had it. He had this aura. He had this charisma that a lot of people can't be taught, and it can't be taught. You just either have it or you don't. And John at that time, he had it. He had it back then, you know, so you knew something was going to happen with this guy. He just didn't know what. So fast forward to WWE and such, working with John, you know, the thing that I always loved about working with John at WWE, whether it was live events or we did some pay-per-views and such, was the fact, you know, that he was always on, and what I mean by that is that he was always so passionate about the show, about his match, about details, of just going out there and giving you everything that he had and working hard. And if you were in the ring with him, he actually wanted you to be working just as hard as he did, whether it be a referee or an opponent. And he really is passionate about what he does. So what everybody sees as far as John and the hustle and loyalty and all that, I mean, the guy's a machine, no pun intended. The guy really lives, eats, sleeps, and breathes, you know, WWE. I mean, and that's why Vince has called him the Babe Ruth of WWE, because, you know, John is WWE. He is the face of WWE. And like you said, he's winding down his career and such. He's had a great career. And John, like I said, John is very passionate about what he does, and he always wants to give you the best.
You can tell that. I, for many years, I was very anti-John Cena. I think it stemmed from 2002. I'm a huge Chris Jericho fan. I guess you can even say I'm a mark for Chris Jericho. And 2002, you know, one of the biggest criticisms I have for Jericho was the fact that he would always just let people get over. But something I didn't see it back in 2002. I guess 15 years later, I've seen it. Just a career that he's had. Let's start and talk about some backstage life as a WWE talent. What's some of the crazy things you experienced backstage?
Well, I mean, it wasn't too crazy in the sense that everybody was out of control. One of the major things that pops out when I hear or you ask, you know, what's one of the craziest experiences? One of the craziest experiences for me was being backstage when the whole Chris Benoit thing went down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the backstage area during that whole time frame was just very surreal. You know, for me personally, I mean, being there and being in that whole backstage thing, it wasn't real. It wasn't real. And then, you know, thinking back about it, you know, so many years later, going like, wow, you know, like that really happened, because nobody at first could really believe it, because we had people looking for Chris. I mean, nobody could get a hold of Chris. And when everybody found out, we all had a meeting with Vince and Stephanie. They pulled everybody together, and that's when they made the announcement. And just the whole environment vibe, I mean, it was so surreal. Like, everybody was scratching their heads, and I remember people dispersing and going off and crying, and just people just literally just being in shock and awe. And that's normally not what you get at WWE backstage. You know, normally the vibe is very upbeat, very intense, and, you know, the show's going. But when that all went down, I mean, for the next few days, even in San Antonio the next day, because what they did is they actually asked people, you know, to volunteer, you know, because they were going to have a tribute show the next day in San Antonio and such. And I remember I volunteered because I was supposed to be going home the next day, and I volunteered. And when we got to SmackDown to do that whole tribute show, a lot more information was out and stuff. And that's like, I want to say, like during the afternoon of in San Antonio at the show is when they found out that it was Chris. It was a double it was a murder suicide. I mean, it was just like everything just kind of stood still. We had another talent meeting, and it was advised, you know, that we weren't going to do anything for Chris, and, you know, per the investigation and things of that nature. And, you know, it was just a whole different vibe. And, you know, I've been backstage at WWE so many times, but that one particular instance during that whole time, it was a whole different vibe and a very odd experience if you were there.
Wow. That's thank you for sharing that. That is very riveting stuff. And I'm sure that it was just such an eerie feeling both before and especially after. I've seen a lot of interviews from different people who are friends of Chris Benoit, and still to this day, people like Chris Jericho and Chavo Guerrero are just like, man, I still can't believe, you know, that happened. So I got a couple more questions for you this time. I've got to bring you back for part two. This has been fantastic so far. So were there any matches that you were supposed to referee, but the plans were changed?
WrestleMania 24 in Orlando. I originally had the Umaga versus Batista match, the Raw versus SmackDown match. I was originally scheduled for that. But then due to circumstances out of my control, a.k.a. somebody going and requesting somebody different, somebody else wanting to change something, they gave me the tag team match with Beth Phoenix and Melina. Snoop Dogg was involved with Santino and such, and I ended up getting that match, and I didn't get the Batista-Umaga match. But for me, it was all... you know, is what it is. I mean, if people wanted to change things, you know, I was just lucky to be there. If somebody else wanted a different referee, by all means, you know, it was something, you know, that I, you know, didn't pout or make a fuss about. For me, it was like, you can put me in any WrestleMania match. I don't care. It's WrestleMania. Exactly. I'm going to be in WrestleMania regardless if it's a tag team or whatever. It's a WrestleMania match. So I didn't care what match I got. And even to this day, I mean, if I was there at WWE and they said, hey, you had this match, you know, you're going to have this match, I was still going to go out and work a WrestleMania match, you know. And that's something that to this day I still feel, you know, that if you're on a WrestleMania match, you know, then that's an honor. You know, that's something nobody gets to do. So, if I had a particular match and then it got taken away, but I got another match, then I was still on WrestleMania. So it didn't change my perspective on anything else. I was still at WrestleMania.
Yep.
There you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic. My last question, and I just want to, real quick, with that, it's funny because you kind of got politicked out of one match at 24, but the next year you you refereed one, arguably the greatest match in WrestleMania history. So it all worked out for you. So,
all worked out for me, bro. All worked out. That's why I don't sweat the small stuff, and stuff happens for a reason, and everything always comes full circle. So if you don't sit and pout about it and make it more than what it is, then ultimately, you know, things are going to shift in your favor, and
absolutely
they did. So, you know, hey, I'm happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there cannot be any picture of WrestleMania 25 with Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker without Marty Elias in the same ring. So take that, politics. So my last question is, were there any matches that you were supposed how are the matches written out backstage? On a board, like, you know, I've seen a lot of backstage documentaries, and I've worked with people who, you know, within indie wrestling. So, you know, some people put them on the paper, some people script them, some people put them in a big, you know, whiteboard. How are they written out backstage in WWE?
It's funny you say that, because with WWE at TVs, whether it be pay-per-views or SmackDowns or Raws and everything, well, the referees were responsible for doing that. And backstage, here's another thing that a lot of people don't get. Referees are responsible for a lot of that little stuff like that, as far as wrangling up the talent for rehearsals. You know, it's referee's responsibility to make sure that, you know, somebody, Joe Smith is ringside when Vince has his rehearsal or their rehearsal ready to go. Because if they're not there, then it's the referee's job to go find this person, whether they're in catering or whether they're, you know, doing an interview or whatever, you know. So it's a referee's duty to make sure that talent is there, and we're wranglers. The other thing is with making sure that locker rooms are picked up and cleaned up after the shows and such. You know, that's another thing. The other thing that referees are in charge of too, or put in charge of, is that we actually check people in, because TVs and pay-per-views and such, you always had to check in folks. You know, so if call time was 11 a.m. and somebody was showing up at 11:05 or 11:15, you needed to document that, and then you needed to turn it into talent relations. Us,
wow,
as referees and such, and a lot of the boys, you know, said, you know, it was stooge duty, and that's pretty much what it was. It's a dirty job. Somebody's got to do it, and unfortunately, referees got stuck with it. More times than not, a lot of the boys would call me and say, hey, I'm stuck in traffic. Hey, I'll be late. Just mark it down, you know, that I called at this time and such. So, you know, we would do that, or I would do that personally. And then if somebody was late, I would say, hey, but they called me, or they did. There were some times, you know, where I turned the other cheek, and if somebody was late, I didn't want to be that stooge and, you know, say, hey, such and such came in at this time, because it wasn't right. You know, it wasn't right. So, and plus I didn't want to see anybody get fined or anything like that, because then that would come back on me. But I just didn't want to do that. But to your point, I took it upon myself to always write up all the run sheets. And like you said, it's a big whiteboard with a dry erase board. And what I would always do is I was always write them, because at first it was Sarge who would do it. And then I took it over from Sarge. And it was funny, because one day Ricky Steamboat walks by and he goes, why don't we make this board interesting? It just seems like it's really boring, because it was always written in black. And I went, yeah, I said, you know, that's cool. So it kind of inspired me to do something different. So what I would always do, writing them all out, whether what city we were in and stuff like that, what I would do is I would write down, let's say if it was Edge versus Cena, whatever, what I would do is I would write like Edge, a rated R superstar, and I would draw his logo and stuff, and I would draw Cena's little "You Can't See Me" stuff. So I made it interesting, and I would write and draw like their logos and stuff, And then after a while, you know, like the other referees, it became a competition where other guys started writing it whenever it was their duty to do it and everything. So we kind of had fun with it, and we would write little notes to each other or write notes with the minutes and of referees and things like that. You know, so it became fun. During live events, the producer would write down the match orders or the matches. If it was six or seven, then with an intermission, then what I would do is I would take it upon myself and I would write them all out on a blank sheet of paper. And I would write all the matches, referees, times, things of that nature. Then I would go up to the building administrator and I would find copies. And then I would go around and I would tape them everywhere in the locker room at gorilla position and just have them everywhere. So the boys would know, you know, that, hey, these matches were here or you were at one or you were four. So I did that. Matter of fact, I still have a bunch of those match lineups and things of that nature in storage, you know, where I just from doing it all the time, you know, like I would be left with a couple copies and everything. So I would just put them in my bag, not even realizing, you know, that I was keeping them unknowingly. So one day when I do write my book or whatever, you know, there's going to be a lot of these different lineup cards from these different cities and things of that nature with all these little notes and things where people can see and go, oh man, you know, so that's what they did. So there you go.
Wow. That is fantastic. Absolutely. And as you know, I write and I'm a journalist for quite a few really known websites, and I'm a 3.8 PhD student right now. So if you need a co-writer, a forward guy, a something or other, you got your old friend Chris over here. I would love to chime in.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Thank you.
I mean, interviewing you the first time really, it really captivated me because, you know, I always wanted to interview a referee because the referee just really is really the sometimes the softest voice, but the loudest voice at the same time when it comes to just wrestling in general. And there's so many different things that a wrestler and an announcer can write about. That's the reason why Justin Roberts' book was so popular, because there were so many good stories. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring in the co-host for tonight, which is, of course, my guy. Without further ado, Under Matt Radio's Evan Tech Proud. How are you tonight, sir?
Well, good. It's an honor to be on the show tonight.
Absolutely.
Hi, Evan.
Hey, Marty. How you feeling, man?
Doing great, man. Thank you.
Good to be on the show with you, as always.
Absolutely, it is. All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. And unfortunately, another sharp turn on the show tonight. We want to send our prayers and condolences to Smith Hart, the eldest Hart brother. So sad. He was battling cancer for quite some time. I believe it was prostate cancer. And, you know, 68 years old, and died on my birthday, unfortunately.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah. That was really good news to hear on my birthday. But, yeah, I mean, he, you know, 68 years old. Of course, he wasn't very known in the States as much as he was in Canada and Puerto Rico. Of course, Stampede, you know, wrestling, he was the man in Stampede wrestling. He was one of the biggest stars in Stampede. Of course, he was also a big star in WWC. The Colognes promotion. I believe he even had a tag team championship run with Bret Hart. So, yeah, I mean, it was, like I said, in Canada, in Puerto Rico, you know, he really, really made a name for himself, of course. So a couple of the biggest appearances that he had, the biggest moments he had in WWE, of course, he helped. He was one of the Harts that trying to climb the cage during the Bret and Owen match. That's the 1994 SummerSlam, which was a very interesting match. Of course, you had Jim the Anvil Neidhart sitting down and making his presence known. And yeah, it was just a heart war at that time. Very, very one of the best angles of the 90s. And then, of course, you know, he helped Bret defeat McMahon at WrestleMania 26. So, yeah, it was, you know, Smith really made a name. I mean, of course, he's a heart. So, interestingly enough, I worked with Smith. I was a columnist at PW Mania when he was. So, so yeah, it was very interesting to work with one of the hearts, and we were both go back and forth with columns together on the site, and yeah, so it was a great opportunity, and it was great to work with them. So definitely my condolences really goes to the Hart family. It's just, you know, the Hart family has really been battling some tough things within the past few years, and. Just my prayers goes with the family. Marty, your thoughts on Smith?
Yeah, a great guy, very underrated. I mean, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet all the Harts. And, you know, anytime we were up in Canada, up in Hart country, so to speak, and all those guys were so cool, very down to earth, you know, very humble. You know, they always had great stories. And it's unfortunate, like you said, you know, the Harts have run into some tragedy and such. And, you know, on my heart and thoughts and prayers go out to them, you know. But, you know, their family's one of a kind. You know,
yeah.
I don't think there's the Harts and the Guerreros, you know, they have a long history in pro wrestling. And, you know, God bless those guys, you know. But, you know, as life happens, you know, we start getting older, we start getting ill, and things start happening.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, it's a part of life, and you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, life happens, and you know, it's sad to see. It really is.
Yeah,
sure is. Absolutely. Evan.
Yeah, it's tough. I spoke to Smith Hart last year on via Facebook. Most people don't know, you know, Father Son, very thankful with Bruce Hart. I talked to him about on his show, and Bob Johnson, Bruce Hart, and the Hart family, and I'm at breakfast a few times. He's always good to me. So, Smith is tough. I knew Smith was bad with cancer. We spoke a lot of times on Facebook. He really didn't do interviews much. He said he'd go up to doing interviews, he would let me know, but most of our conversations is via Facebook Messenger. I still have them in my log, and just talking about the business in Calgary and Canada. And surprisingly, he's a very nice guy. So just being Facebook friends with him, he did post something, I believe, a month ago where he mentioned he was in hospice and
yep.
mentioned that his time here on Earth wasn't too long. And I think he saw two things going about the lines of forgiving and, you know, you only live once. And, you know, it meant a lot. That's the first thing that I thought about when I got the news that he passed away. Was that Facebook status he put up not long ago about, you know, forgiving one another, the power of forgiveness. So, definitely tough. You know, he passed away on your birthday. And there's somebody else in the business, one of the boys, you say, that passed away of, you know, it's not here anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. So once again, our thoughts and prayers are definitely with the Hart family, and you know, tough to hear, but I'm you know, prayerfully he's in a better place, and if he certainly is, he definitely is cancer free there. So, Gail Kim planning to retire this year, early 40s. She's been at it for quite some time now. Of course, she had a meteoric rise in the WWE before kind of she kind of peaked too soon because you know, she wanted to leave eventually because just after she peaked very soon in her career, it just started to spiral down a bit, and then, you know, she had a very favorable career in Impact Wrestling. Now it's TNA formerly, now Impact Wrestling.
Now
we'll talk about the extra edition as well.
Yeah.
I mean, just when she was with Impact, just a very favorable career, Hall of Famer, and she really is one of the, she's one of the only female wrestlers, you know, in the WWE who really showed that she can become legendary without necessarily being in the WWE, because she really made a, she really had a fantastic career in Impact Wrestling. I saw Evan this time. She's been battling some back surgery, some back problems. She recently had surgery. That's the reason why she hasn't been wrestling for a while. And, you know, it's just one of those things that she's kind of banged up. And, you know, her husband, Robert, you know, he has his show, his talk show. And,
you know, he's
so he's been doing, you know, they've been doing, you know, they've been doing fantastic, you know, over the years. So I don't think it's going to be any type of deficit financially. I'm sure they're in good status. Hopefully they are. I'm sure they are. So it didn't look like it'll be a big loss for her, and I think it's a good call, because a lot of people, unfortunately, they do see themselves in some really big financial troubles, and even though they're injured and know they can't really go, they kind of have to go just because of the lack of benefits that come with the pro wrestling business, you know. So you know. So kudos to her.
Yeah, I feel the same way. She definitely one of the few women who are not only women, one of the few wrestlers that could say they became legendary without the help of Vince or WWE or the Machine. And people don't really give her credit of her and Kong, awesome Kong. Of, I know everybody talk about the Divas Revolution, it was, what, a year ago, of Four Horsewomen and put women on the map again. People don't realize a year or two before that, Impact was main eventing women wrestling. It was Kong and Gail Kim, and that was sometimes the best matches of the night. And you definitely got to give her credit. She always works hard. She always had a natural look, and she works hard in the ring, so. Definitely give her. And she looks the same. She still looks good. She doesn't look like she aged. She looks exactly how she did when she started, when she was in her prime, you know, going against Kong and anyone else in Impact Wrestling or Anthem Isle or formerly known as TNA or Global Force. There's so many different names. So, yeah, I'm proud of her. She definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, absolutely. Marty, I think you, I know she left and she came back for a hiccup. I don't know if you were there to catch working with Gail Kim. Okay. So let us know your experience working with Gail.
Yeah, it was great. You know, I was there when she made her return, and I know that she was nervous as can be. And she was really, really, you know, turning it on because, you know, she really wanted to make a major splash on her return with WWE. But one of the things, you know, that I'll always remember about Gail is, you know, that she had the gall to go out on her own terms via WWE, you know, which a lot of people don't get to do, and then go back and have a very good career with Impact Wrestling, you know. So I will always remember Gail for that. You know, she went out on her terms, you know, in that Divas Battle Royal on Raw, where she just eliminated herself and she was out. You know, I'll never forget that. And that's one of the qualities, you know, that's one of the qualities, you know, that I really feel, you know, that she was separated from the women because she had the gall to do that and say, look, you know, I'm going to do things my way, not your way, which is always going against the grain. And for her to go back to Impact and have the career and have the matches that she's had, you know, it's very, very cool, you know, because a lot of people don't get to do that. And if she goes out and if she's had some back surgery, I get it. I'm sure she'll be okay, you know, because I know she can go out and do some appearances and things of that nature. And plus her husband seems like he's well established.
He needs to be a wrestler. He needs to be a wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty jacked.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, good for her. Good for her. And here's the thing, you know, that I see too much in wrestling. It's one of the things, you know, that I feel, you know, that it's, oh man, I never want to be that guy, is that people stay too long.
Very true.
People stay too long. So
absolutely.
If she's getting out, good for her.
Yep. Overstay their welcome. We definitely don't want that. I was just talking about that with Bill Eady. I mean, you know, 70 years old, just about, and, you know, just retiring. And it just, man, for someone to have such a legendary, you know, name, and it's just, man, it's tough because there's only, like I've said this before, that, I mean, there's thousands of people who call themselves professional wrestlers. I mean, there's hundreds of independent promotions across the entire nation. And a handful, you know, a few handfuls of people who are just trying to, you know, claw and scratch to make a dime on the weekends. And there's only a top 1% of people who really can say, you know, that they, you know, can make a very sizable living off of being a professional wrestler. And it's really tough because, you know, you have the people kind of in the middle of the pack who are popular names but still don't have, you know, all of those zeros behind, you know, that one number that they still have to keep going and going and going and going and 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, man, it's just so tough but that's the business that they chose, you know, they're aware of
Amen.
That.
Amen.
So, yeah. All right. So Cody Rhodes, a young stallion of a man that he is, he receives a black backlash because of his being picked to go against Okada. Now, so for those who aren't necessarily aware, most of the listeners are aware of wrestling outside the WWE. But of course, Cody Rhodes, he got released about 50. Well, he kind of wanted to leave almost 15 months ago. And within that time, he's been doing very well in the independent scene. He won a GFW Next Gen Championship, some independent championships. He recently won the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship at Best in the World. He's made some headway in New Japan. First competed there after announcing that he joined the Bullet Club a few weeks before Wrestle Kingdom 11 on January the 4th, beat Juice Robinson. Since then, he's been, he's been a big hand in the Bullet Club. Like I said, he won the ROH World Championship. And New Japan, a fantastic promotion. Over the past few years, they've been really, really having some fantastic exposure in the States. Had their first independent U.S. They usually come to the States they partner with ROH or NWA. A few years ago, it was NWA. The past few years, currently, have been ROH. So, but this was a New Japan show. This was exclusively New Japan. And of course, they had ROH, you know, stars there, but this was a New Japan show. This is the first one ever. So they wanted a big American name. They chose, you know, Cody to be the opposite of Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP Championship. And so that wasn't very well received by a lot of people online, according to the Wrestling Observer. They didn't think he was a big name yet, and he was big enough in Japan. So, Marty, what are your thoughts on that as far as just Cody's status in the pro wrestling field? Where do you think he is, and what do you think he can improve in, and what are some of his strengths?
Cody works hard. You know, that's one of the things, you know, that I liked about Cody, you know, because I was there when Cody was first brought up. Matter of fact, his first live event show he ever worked with WWE, I refereed it, and he worked against Daivari. And 3 minutes into the match, Daivari called the back elbow, which Cody didn't hear. And then Cody ate elbow right between his eyes, which required like 42 stitches. So,
welcome
yeah.
to the WWE.
Welcome to the WWE, kid. And I see Cody progressing, and it's always funny to hear guys say, you know, that they didn't have the juice or the freedom or WWE was holding them down, things of that nature. And I believe Cody has mentioned that and things of that nature. So, I mean, if you go away from WWE and you get to do these different things, and if you're not at WWE and you're not on that top spot and everything, you're not at that top spot for a reason. But if you get to go away and prove yourself and things of that nature, God bless you. But yeah. Here's my humble opinion. If you ever want to be recognized in this business, or you want to be the top guy, or you want to make a ton of money, then WWE is where you need to be. I totally get the New Japan and all that, which is doing great. I love New Japan. I love Japanese wrestling, Ring of Honor, what people are doing. Here's my take, is that those places aren't WWE. And if you really want to be the guy, then WWE is the guy where you need to be the guy. So there you go. That's my take.
That. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Evan, just based on what Marty said as far as just being WWE, you have to be the guy. I can think of a few people now who are doing very well in the indies, but it's still kind of a missing link, you know, especially people like the Young Bucks, you know, that's the first people I think about, you know, and Will Ospreay is another person I think about doing fantastic outside the WWE, but it's just, there's just a level that they haven't necessarily reached yet. Do you think Cody can use this time being in New Japan, being in Ring of Honor, to kind of increase his stock for a WWE return? And how does that look? Do we still kind of give him the same kind of excuses of why, or reasons? I mean, you know, it's reasons to WWE. It's probably excuses to Cody, but WWE found some legitimacy in their reasoning. Do you think that he can earn his stock to become finally a top player? Or if he came to the WWE, would it just kind of be the same type of position that he was in?
I think it all depends. Cody, sadly, and I'm sure Marty agree with me on this, because I'm not, you know, me and you fellas, we're media in the business. We're not one of the boys for all the wrestlers. But, you know, this isn't the territory days. This isn't the 80s or even the early to mid-90s where you had, you know, WCW or WWF or AWA or Texas. You don't have multiple places to go. The way, if you didn't make it with that, you could go to Turner. If you didn't make it to Turner, you could go to Smoky Mountain. Or you could go to Texas and go be a big name, Von Erichs, Fritz, or with the Blanchards, or, you know. So now, like Marty said, WWE is a big cheese. That's where you go to get the multiple, the worldwide exposure. I mean, hence James Ellsworth, who, as you know, I've known the man personally. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland. I've supported the guy's personal promotion here. I've been on the road with the guy. I've known him, all of that before WWE, and now everybody knows who he is. So like Marty said, that's where you go. Cody already was in WWE. He already had a stint there, as we know. So, of course, when you're in WWE for a good few years, people know of you. When you go back to the indies, of course, your stock raises. Now that he's kind of been able to work on his own, and a lot of the guys, as you know, fellas, know that we've interviewed and talked to when they left WWE, the one thing that they've told us, and the one thing they've always said, is, I finally can get the wrestle the way I want to. I finally can get creative. I finally can be more creative and be who I want to be, and not told by the machine to be. And I think Cody, I mean, I don't blame Cody. I watched the match against Okada. I mean, I don't see why people are going against, well, Cody isn't over. It's a New Japan show in the States. They needed a big enough name that would generate the American audience, because say a lot of the wrestling audience here in the States don't know who Okada is. They don't know who Tanahashi is. They don't know about New Japan. Some of the American fans are just WWE, and that's it. Or some of them are just strictly to the States wrestling. So they don't know nothing about Okada or Tanahashi. They probably only heard of Okada because of Kenny Omega. So I agree with Cody, and this probably was a rub to kind of get Cody. It takes time. You know, give Cody a little bit the way he got the wrestle against Okada. You know, you see a feud down the line with Omega. Give him a little bit. Maybe his stock can rise. Maybe he could be like a seed old Brock, where Brock was in WWE, he left. He was successful. Brock came back, and he's the big monster. So maybe with Cody, if he's not able to get to that next level, per se, in the Indies, maybe another run in WWE, maybe they'll push him a little higher. So, like you say, we don't know. But same thing with AJ. As I said before, I'm friends with AJ Styles. He gave lunch and everything together. I knew right before he did Wrestle Kingdom, and we talked, and I said, AJ, you have to go to WWE now. There's nothing else for you to do. Like you said, it was just that missing link. You done everything else. And now look where he's at. And that's the one thing he needed. He needed that extra push to where he's a household name. And I think that's maybe what Cody needs. Maybe he just needs a second orange.
And it's a great point with AJ Styles. I think with all the accomplishments that he has done, he was the face of TNA for so long, came in and won the IWGP Championship on his first match, I believe it was. he made a name for himself. You know, he really kind of gave the Bullet Club the kind of revamping that they needed. But at the same time, there was still something missing. When he came to WWE, that was exactly what he needed for his career. So, absolutely. Great points.
Real quick question I had, maybe for Marty, you may know, because I know you was in WWE at the time. Well, I've noticed with a lot of wrestlers and even fans that we talked to on our show, most people didn't know who Cody was and paid attention to Cody until Stardust. And once he became Stardust, and everybody, it seems like everybody liked him, will kind of got attention. Is it true that Cody liked Stardust? Do you know, Marty? Was he a fan of the character, or was he just doing it because that's what the company wanted him to do, and he wanted to do his own thing?
I wasn't there when they gave him the gimmick, but I know that they tried everything in their power to get him over as far as being Cody Rhodes and things. You know,
right.
That's why they had him with Randy, and they had him with DiBiase and that stuff, you know, like really trying to push him to the moon. And I know that they were doing everything they could to get him over. Unfortunately, sometimes guys just don't click with the audience, and sometimes, you know, they got to revamp or revise a gimmick and things of that nature. I haven't heard anything negative as far as him liking it or disliking it, but I know that when they gave it to him, it was kind of almost like a said, hey, you know, we can't go anywhere else with you. So, you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Another thing, you know, that I'd like to mention too is that people can say all they want about Backlash or Cody. He didn't get the spot, things of that nature. That's not for anyone to be judgmental about. And the reason I say that is because New Japan as a company, as a whole, made that decision to go with Cody. So if they're feeling comfortable with Cody, then God bless them. Then that's who they're going to go with.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, something about him that says a lot. It really does. I mean, for New Japan to have their first ever independent show in the States and say, out of all the people who were former WWE talent, you know, we got, you know, my dude Dan Hinkles. I conversed with him a lot with Five Star Wrestling. I mean, he went straight for the gusto. He wanted CM Punk. You know, so he's still trying to get him.
Yeah.
So, but New Japan said, hey, listen, we won't go that far because we probably know that that's just a worthless attempt to do that. Yeah. But Cody Rhodes is who we're looking at and say, yeah, he's the guy. He's the American representation that he's the American representative that we want to headline our show. So, I mean, you really can't say much. I mean, you know, you can't say Kenny Omega because Kenny Omega is a Canadian, you know what I mean? So, he's the American guy that we want. And we are, you know, basically this, I would say, and I believe probably 98% of people polled would say that New Japan is the second biggest promotion in the world, you know, behind WWE. So
yeah.
That's a big deal. So, you know, judge him or not, you know, I'm sure that he was pretty happy Backlash for not receiving that check. So,
and I thought the match was good.
He's a solid player. I mean, he's one of those people who can turn around and whatever he was given, he made it good. I mean, Stardust, he made it charismatic. The dashing gimmick was, to me, I thought it was trash in the beginning, but he made it great. To me, the best time of his career was the brown paper bag.
Yeah,
you know,
I love that.
Yeah. I thought that was genius. I mean,
that was
a fantastic run by him. And just wearing the mask, and that was just fantastic. So, I mean, he got what was given to him, he was able to excel with. And but like you said, Marty, just there was just that it factor that didn't necessarily click from a main event level. But I think it could have came. Real quick, this is just a simple question. We'll start with Marty. The women's wrestling had a historic event. Triple H and Stephanie McMahon mentioned it last week. They're three, you know, biggest shows of the week, which is Raw, SmackDown, and NXT. All had women's main events. The Gauntlet match, the Women's Money in the Bank match, and of course Asuka and Nikki Cross. Last woman standing match. So yeah, it was, you know, that was big, and it made me think. So, Marty, you've had so much experience, you know, you can see, especially refereeing for the Glow series, you can see just the amazing evolution of women's wrestling. How far out do you think a women's match would main event WrestleMania, if at all?
I say within the next year or two,
wow.
Tops.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, the way awesome. Women's wrestling is evolving and the way a lot of these girls are working, I mean, it was only a matter of time. It was only a matter of time. And, you know, women wrestlers have been working their tails off for years. And now with the way people are just built physically, you know, as far as workout diets, things of that nature, you know, there's females a lot more athletic, and it goes back to one of those things that anything you can do, I can do too. And I think it's gearing towards that, where I wouldn't be surprised if you see women main eventing mainly within the next year or two, or if not within the next 5 years, because it's coming. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's coming. It's almost one of those things, you know, we're at the point where when Barack Obama got elected president, we knew that we were going to have our first black president sooner than later. So I like to give that analogy that we are going to have our first WrestleMania female match sooner than later.
Who would be the match based on the people you see now?
Oh God. It depends on who's getting it, but I wouldn't be surprised to see some international women involved with that, or it could be Charlotte versus one of these international girls. You know,
perhaps Asuka has her undefeated streak for the next year, and maybe the streak is on the line at WrestleMania against like a Charlotte or a Sasha Banks or something.
You never know.
Yeah,
you never know. So yeah,
yeah.
You know, if anything, I want to say maybe Charlotte will be involved with it, or maybe somebody coming in to the women's tournament will be involved. You never know.
Very interesting. Adam, real quick, what do you think the timeline is for a women's WrestleMania match?
I would say about 5 or 6 years. I don't believe it will be in the next 2-3 years. But the main thing is that WWE has to literally take the machine and stick it all the way up them, you know, for us, stick them on that rocket and push them to beyond, like they did Hogan, like they did Cena, like they're doing Reigns, because we all know Mania is the big money draw. We've all been to Mania. Marty's worked to get number of them. That's the big cheese. That's where Vince puts all his stock in, and he has to get that to return. And anybody that's going to main event Mania has to be a big box office draw. And if you want to be a big box office draw, you got to be somebody that Vince has faith in and the machine is going to encourage him. And
amen.
Like you said, that Oscar, and he said the words about my mouth, Oscar and Charlotte. Charlotte already got the name recognition. She can wrestle. You have Oscar, or it could be somebody new. But I just think if they do a 2 to 3 year plan, we can map it out to where, okay, this is 2017, and so, okay, we'll take Oscar, we're going to push her, and reset maybe by 2019, 2020, and nothing could work. It could work.
Yeah.
But he has to take that rocket, and he got to have whoever it is, like they're doing Reigns or like they did Cena, anybody else. They're going to absolutely push them, and they have to do it. And I feel this is my business background. It has to be a 2 or 3 year plan because you want to make sure she's on all of the appearances, all of the social medias, all of the meet and greets, all of the talk shows. So when you put her name on the marquee, people, and then also, of course, her being used well within, you know, booked well within, you know, the company, then people definitely want to come on and see it. But I hope it happens.
Yeah. It would definitely be interesting. I definitely think it'll be a draw because people will want to see it. Even that's the thing about wrestling. The thing about sports, period. Even the critics pay their money to see it. So even if you'll have a bunch of people saying, "Oh, I think they're gonna bomb," but they're paying and they're sitting right next to the person who wants it to work. So admission. Just because you're criticizing doesn't mean it's going to change the price of the admission. You're still paying the same for the ticket of the person next to you. So,
hey,
as a business, who cares? So,
who would have thought all of WWE, all of their weekly programming in a whole week has been main evented with women? And by average, half of Raw, it's a 50-50 chance of Raw. And right now, Raw isn't the same main event. You got Enzo and Cass main eventing, and you can have Joe main eventing, you got the women. So
yeah, Strowman and Apollo Crews.
Right, Apollo Crews, the Razorbacks. Yeah, the Razorbacks and Strowman. So people complain about seeing the same main event. So you give it to Vince, especially with Raw. Hey, you watch Raw, you don't know who's going to main event. So,
yeah.
I mean, you don't give it to them.
Absolutely.
You might see my last main event Raw.
Yeah.
You'd like to see that.
That would be interesting. real quick, for the time constraints, let's just real quick thoughts. Let's start with Marty. Impact Wrestling acquires GFW. It seems like this was inevitable. I mean, this is basically just the official, you know, announcement. I interviewed Sanjay Dutt a couple weeks ago, and he's, you know, part of the backstage, you know, committee within GFW who came to be under the umbrella of an Impact. You know, and so when Jared came in, I'm sure that he wanted, you know, GFW to still be alive. And now you see it kind of the GFW letters on top of the Impact logo now. And they're even thinking about having it GFW, you know, forgetting, just doing away with TNA's done, doing away with Impact as a kind of an umbrella. And so, you know, the reports that GFW will be the umbrella and Impact will still be the weekly show. What are your thoughts on that?
I think Jeff Jarrett's a smart guy. You know, for him to constantly be in that loop and be involved with it and to see it where it, TNA is when they first started in 2002 up until today. I think Jeff has been very smart. I think Jeff has had a plan this whole time of where he wanted to go and where he wanted to be. And I think this is just everything that Jeff Jarrett has dreamed about. I think we're all starting to see it unveiled or unfold. So, you know, like I give Jeff a lot of credit for sticking through with all his dreams and his goals.
Evan, your thoughts on Jarrett?
I just had Jared on my show this past Thursday talking about Slammiversary, and he's smart. I give him credit. I saw that he is on Global Force, and I know because of title strength, I know some more background on the Global Force and the TV deal he could have had, but it makes sense. You helped start TNA. Went well, you left. You started another company that went okay. Door opens up, go back home, go to the company from within, and take the company that you was working in, and you just merge it. It makes sense. Yeah, I just literally had a fan of my show comment on our page and say how Jared was with that and didn't make sense, and I broke it down and said, think about it, it's smart. And when I broke it down for him, I said, you know what, that's a good point. I said, Jared is a dumb guy. Pretty smart, you can't blame him. Just get rid of that now, though.
Well, you can't do that because he's Anthem is still his boss. So we're gonna see an owl no matter what. It's OWL for life. So real quick, Evan, we'll start with you. Just a compilation of your Raw and SmackDown Live review of this week.
Raw was okay. The main event was hilarious. The reason that's going to be gone. I didn't see the first hour. I wasn't sure if Joe was on Raw or Brock was on Raw or not, but I'm looking forward to a group of the fire. SmackDown overall was meh. It was okay. It was all right. You know, 205 Live needs help.
See, it's Independence Day. Well, it's actually technically July 5th now, but the beginning of the show, it was Independence Day. I was, and you know, we want to celebrate our freedom, you know. But here's the thing: 205 Live, the Cruiserweights had their freedom, you know, from the main roster essentially. But as soon as I hear 205 Live, it automatically gets there. I can't do it. You know, just I tried. I'm cool with, you know, with Cedric Alexander. I've had him on my show. I've had Arya Daivari on my show. I've talked to Noam Dar a few times. You know, decent guy. And sadly, I can't. Just they've nothing to do with the talent. Nothing at all to do with the talent. But just the way that they're being booked is terrible. Your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown? Marty Elias.
I have to wholeheartedly admit that I didn't see any of the shows.
Oh, that's totally fine. You really didn't miss too much. The Enzo Amore big cast thing was okay. There was, you know, there's still some work. Still some work with Cass as a heel. It's really not clicking to me still. I told myself that I was going to be open to it, but just as the weeks progress, I'm still not buying it. But it just seems like at first, and it's really interesting how this works, because you know, when you have a couple of tag team pairings, a lot of the times you think one person's going to be the one that soars, and they don't. The other person does. You know, when you have Miz and Morrison, I mean, it just really seemed like Morrison was going to be the guy. You know, like he was going to be the one who soars, and Miz was the one who ended up being the world champ. I mean, yeah, Morrison was ECW champ, but the Miz definitely got the better end of the stick there. You know, Cody Rhodes and Teddy DiBiase Jr. And DiBiase Jr. is a fantastic guy. He loves the Lord and a great hand, great pedigree, solid wrestler, really awesome dude. But he didn't, and it seems like they were kind of veering off for him to be the spotlight guy. But Rhodes ended up being the one who was elevated more than him, and I see it now here, where it just seems like they really want Cass to be the person. They really want him to be the guy. We'll get to the Great Balls of Fire predictions here at the end of the show, but it seems like they're really doing a lot with Cass. With Enzo, they might just be building him up to lose to Cass, but didn't really look too good. The rest of Raw for me was okay. Apollo Crews got his main event spot on Raw. How about that? but yeah, it was a decent Raw. It wasn't really exciting. I admittedly was watching this. I spent time with my family watching fireworks last night, and I started watching Raw around 11:30 p.m. And dozed off a few times, had to rewind it, and finished up about 2:30 in the morning. And this time for SmackDown, I had to go in and out of SmackDown because I spent time with family tonight too. But yeah, SmackDown was okay. But I'll tell you what, I'm glad that Naomi just took Lana within seconds. I think that was great. Rusev came back, and it's just, you know, and going back to Cena, it's amazing. You know, it's one of those things that the fans just like to put themselves over a lot of times nowadays. And he came in, whole John sucks thing, and he gets the boos. But, man, I mean, I got to give him major props. I mean, within just a snap of a finger, he was able to get 90% of the crowd in his favor. And Rusev comes out. They're doing the, you know, Bulgaria anti-America Rusev. Kind of pigeonholed him again. You know, it's just a kind of, it's kind of pigeonholing him. Yeah, I mean, it's just, at first, it worked a lot. It really put him over. But, I mean, the guy is just getting pigeonholed once again. I mean, and now they're doing some type of flag match. It seems like that's going to be for Battleground. I'm okay with Rusev feuding with Cena again because Rusev needs that main event style feud. I mean, it's just he needs it because he hasn't really been relevant for quite some time.
I disagree on that one. Rusev has been down the road. He hit the single walls. We talk, and nothing against Cena, Marty. Nothing, but he hit the single wall. We build him up. He's unstoppable. He hit the single wall. Lost at Mania 31. He hasn't been the same. Now Rusev comes back. And it's like, okay, if you had a flag match tonight on 4th of July, it makes sense. Yeah. But now it's too many other superstars on SmackDown that Rusev could have worked with to give him some new blood,
put him over
as a heel, and get him a stand. Because when he fights Cena, he's not going to win. We know it's going to be just like Mania 31. He's going to win.
I can agree with that. And I totally agree with that. But at the end of the day, it doesn't seem like they have much stock in Rusev anyways. So if he's going to come back and lose, I'd rather for him to come back and lose against Top Guy. Because I think the bottom line is he's going to come back and lose. He's going to put somebody over. I'd rather for him to be in a feud with the Top Guy of the business and put somebody over. So that's my philosophy. I don't see them working with Rusev as a Top Guy. He should be, but I don't see it. So you might as well begin a feud with the Top Guy. I see we got some callers. Let's take one call real quick. Just real quick, let us know your name and your thoughts. Real quick, what's your question? Your name and your question. Thanks for calling in.
My name is the Macho Man Randy Savage, and I have a question. I want to know if you could pass on a message to Hulk Hogan. I'm looking down.
Okay, I don't know that. That's all you get. You only get so much. And if you don't have a question, you will get that guy was. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the final part of the show before the predictions. Let's get to the Flavor of the Week Will Crick, ladies and gentlemen, here we go.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
All right. And for the Macho Man, terrible impersonator, you get one of these. So you can carry that on with you tonight. All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about, real quick, the Flavor of the Week. We will get to the Bash. We've been talking about one-off pay-per-views, and we only have, literally 3 minutes to talk about it. This is the last of our series. We might prolong this for another few weeks. This has been going really well. We've been talking about one-off pay-per-views. Pay-per-views have only been in the WWE just literally one time the entire series. We talked about Capital Punishment, and then we talked about this Tuesday in Texas. This week, we're going to talk about WWE The Bash. Of course, it was the Great American Bash, and then for 1 year in 2009, it was just simply called The Bash. Interestingly enough, Marty Elias was a referee at The Bash. Real quick, just as far as the lineup, it was Tommy Dreamer going against Christian, Jack Swagger, Finley, and Henry of the Championship Scramble Match for the ECW Championship. Rey Mysterio defeating Chris Jericho in a title versus Max match and winning the Intercontinental Championship. Fantastic match. Dolph Ziggler beating the Great Khali. How about that? Edge and Jericho defeating the Legacy and the Colognes for the Unified Tag Team Championship, winning the championship. And then Edge got hurt a little bit after that. Michelle McCool defeating Melina, winning the Women's Championship. Then Hardy defeating CM Punk. It was a qualification, but it's for the World Championship. John Cena defeating The Miz, and then Randy Orton defeating Triple H in the Three Stages of Hell match. So real quick, let's go to Evan. Just your really really quick thoughts on the pay per view, and what would you grade it?
I can honestly say it was an okay pay per view. Triple H and Orton does not, you know, they have that good of chemistry. They both are tremendous in the ring. And the Three Stages of Hell, the pay-per-view wasn't bad, and it's really tough over there. And it took me Three Stages of Hell, I thought, you know, get to bring that concept back. It was only, to also the material history, I believe, both having Triple H in them. But Triple H and Orton is, they don't have the best chemistry. And that match is okay. But
yeah. All right, Evan. Marty, what are your thoughts? You ref the show and gave us your thoughts on it.
I remember the scramble match just being very, very. The time got cut. You know, that's one of the things I remember. I remember we had something like maybe 25 minutes. And then by the time we got out there, I think we had maybe 11, you know, so it was very rushed. And it was one of those things, again, with pay-per-view, TV, things like that, you know, you're given a specific time, then all of a sudden, you know, like thank God you had guys like Finley and Dreamer and those guys in there who ring generals and Christian, you know, who could, you know, get us through this. But it was very, very rushed. I think on a scale of 1 to 10, it was probably a 4 or 5 pay-per-view. It wasn't a pay-per-view that many folks cared about, you know, because it was just, you know, something that they took from WCW. And that was always surprising, you know, that they took the WCW pay-per-views and made them their own. And that's why, you know, you don't see them today.
Yeah. I wish they would have just kept the Great American Bash. I mean, just calling it The Bash was just it just sounds so knockoffy to me.
And that big reason my heart. So I'm Baltimore. So about 90%, 85% of the Bashes were here. And I was at all of them. The Bash was a slap in the face.
And it'd be on the other side of the nation from Baltimore and Sacramento. So. That was another way to say, screw you, Baltimore. Let's go on the other side of the country and name it The Bash.
Yeah.
So, All right, let's get to the real quick, the Great Balls of Fire predictions. Should be an interesting pay-per-view. The name is terrible, but still can't get to it. All right, real quick, we literally got a few minutes. Let's start with The Miz against Dean Ambrose for the Intercontinental Championship. Marty, who you have?
I'd love to see The Miz.
Absolutely. Evan, who you got?
The Miz,
like they do y'all in front of me, this match. The team needs to end. I agree, it does. The Miz, I got The Miz. 30-man Ironman match for the tag team championships. Does Cesaro and Sheamus retain, Evan, or do the Hardy Boys once again become champions? Yes.
Nah, Cesaro and Sheamus retain
so
they can get a blow off the SummerSlam. And you start to hit more broken at Hardy as you speak.
Yeah, I got Sheamus and Cesaro as well. Who do you have, Marty?
I'm right there with you guys. I think they're going to prolong the storyline and maybe give it some twists and turns, you know. But I'm right there with you guys, and I feel, you know, that they will retain.
Mm-hmm. Marty, who you got between Enzo and Kaz?
If anything, they're probably going to go with Kaz. He's a big man. They probably want to book him as a big man, and they'll probably have him destroy Enzo.
Yeah. Evan, real quick, your thoughts on Enzo and Cass? What you got?
I got me pick getting a snack and this one. Me can't even win.
Yeah, Cass for sure. Marty, Rollins and Wyatt.
I would really love to see Wyatt go over and build something with those guys, you know, because both of them are good talents. And, you know, I'm a big Wyatt fan, and I would really like to see him have something of a good run with somebody, you know, that they can carry something out with.
Yeah. Evan, real quick, we got Rollins, Wyatt.
I'm with Marty.
I say Wyatt now. Just to extend the feud. Marty, Alexa Bliss or Sasha Banks?
I'll go with Sasha.
Yeah. Interesting. Evan, Sasha Banks or Alexa Bliss?
Sasha's been there before. Give it to Alexa so she can keep going to her
up. I see Alexa and Nia Jax being the big match. I don't know why. They're two heels, but it seems like they're building them. So I'll go with Alexa. All right, real quick. Let's go. Real quick, just your guess on this one. Neville and Akira Tozawa, that's the Cruiserweight title match at the pre-show. Who you got, Marty?
Neville.
Yeah. Evan?
Creepy as Neville.
Yeah, Neville as well. Let's go Lesnar and Joe for the Universal Championship. Marty?
Joe.
Interesting.
I honestly feel that they're going to try and surprise people and probably give it a different twist. And I really feel the way they're building Joe is that, you know, he's going to go over on Brock somehow.
Hmm. Interesting. Evan, the thoughts?
I like Joe, but I'm
going to
say no contest.
No contest. I say Brock Lesnar. Yeah. All right, real quick, we've got about 30 seconds. Marty, Roman Reigns or Braun Strowman ambulance match?
I want to say Braun Strowman.
Evan?
I will finish with you. You're off.
Roman Reigns is going to go against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. Yes, and I will be happy. All right, real quick, Mario Elias, let the listeners know. There's about 20 seconds. Let them know about Glow.
Glow's amazing. Check it out on Netflix. It's streaming now, all 10 episodes. I happen to be in episode 5, Debbie Does Something. And, you know, thank you for all the continued support.
Awesome. Always a pleasure to have you. We gotta get part two in the Q&A as well. Evan, Under the Mat Radio, 7 p.m. on Tuesdays.
Yeah, 7 p.m. on Tuesdays. Yeah. Monday today marks the 40th anniversary of Under the Mat Radio, so thank you all for this place. Thank you, Marty, and Travis Stone. Thank you.
Man, that's awesome. Happy anniversary. Ladies and gentlemen, and this is another show, 275 episodes in the books. God bless you all. Thank you to all those listening. Have a good night. Happy 4th. God bless. Bye. We'll be right back.